Chapter 4. Into Kyrian. Perrin would have set a harder pace than Rand did, though he knew the horses could not have stood it long. Half the time they rode at a trot, the other half ran alongside their animals. Rand seemed unaware of anyone else, except that he always had a hand for Min if she stumbled. For the rest, he was lost in some other world, blinking in surprise when he noticed Perrin or Loyal. Truth to tell, nobody was any better. Dobrain's men and Javian's stared straight ahead, chewing their own worries over what they would find. The Two Rivers men had soaked in Perrin's dark mood. They liked Fael. Truth be told, some worshipped her. And if she had been hurt in any way... Even Aram's eagerness grew bleak once he realized that Fael might be in danger. Every man focused on the leagues before them, toward the city ahead. Except for the Ashaman, anyway. Close behind Rand, like a cluster of ravens, they studied the country the column crossed, still wary of an ambush. Dashiva slumped in his saddle like a sack and muttered darkly to himself when he had to run. He glared as if he hoped there was an ambush. Small chance of that. Suolin and a dozen Fardarai's Mai trotted ahead of the column in Perrin's sight, with as many more farther ahead, probing the way, and an equal number on the flanks. Some had thrust their short spears into the harnesses that held their bowcases on their backs, so the spearheads bobbed above their heads. The short horn bows were out, arrows knocked. They kept equally sharp watch for anything that might threaten the Kaer Karn, and on Rand himself, as though they suspected he might vanish again. If any trap waited, any danger approached, they would find it. Chiad was one of the maidens with Suolin, a tall woman with dark reddish hair and gray eyes. Perrin stared at her back, willing her to drop behind the others and speak to him. Now and then she spared him a glance, but she avoided him, as if he had three diseases, all catching. Bane was not with the column. Most of the maidens followed much the same route with Ruark and the Al-Ghaid Siswai, but moving more slowly because of the wagons and prisoners. Fael's black mare trotted behind Stepper, her reins tied to his saddle. The Two Rivers men had brought Swallow from Camelin when they joined him before Dumai's Wells. Every time he looked at the mare prancing along behind him, his wife's face swelled in his thoughts, her bold nose and generous mouth, flashing dark eyes tilted above high cheekbones. She loved the animal, maybe almost as much as she did him. A woman as proud as she was beautiful, as fiery as she was proud. Davram Bashir's daughter would not hide or even hold her tongue, not for the likes of Kolaver. Four times they stopped to rest the mounts, and he ground his teeth at the delay. Taking good care of horses was second nature to him. He checked Stepper absently, gave the stallion a little water by rote. Swallow he was more careful with. If Swallow reached Kyrian safely... A notion had planted itself in his mind. If he brought her mare to Kyrian, Fael would be all right. It was ludicrous, a boy's fancy, a small boy's foolish fancy, and it would not go away. At each of those stops, Min tried to reassure him. With a bantering grin, she said he looked like death on a winter morning, just waiting for somebody to shovel his grave full. She told him if he approached his wife with a face like that, Fael would slam the door on him. But she had to admit that none of her viewings promised that Fael was unharmed. "Light, Perrin," she said at last in exasperated tones, snugging her gray riding gloves. "If anyone tries to harm the woman, she'll make him wait out in the hall till she has time for him." He very nearly growled at her. It was not that the two disliked each other exactly. Loyal reminded Perrin that hunters for the horn could take care of themselves, that Fael had survived Trollocs unscathed.
"She is well, Perrin,"
he boomed heartily, trotting beside Stepper with his long axe across his shoulders.
"I know she is."
But he said the same 20 times, and each time he sounded a little less hearty. The Ogier's final attempt at heartening went further than Loyal intended.
"I am sure Fael can look after herself, Perrin. She is not like Aerith. I can hardly wait for Aerith to make me her husband so I can tend her. I think I'd die if she changed her mind."
At the end of that, his mouth remained open, and his huge eyes popped. ears fluttering, he stumbled over his own boots and nearly fell.
"I never meant to say that,"
he said hoarsely, strutting along beside Perrin's horse once more. His ears still trembled.
"I am not sure I want to. I'm too young to get—"
Swallowing hard, he gave Perrin an accusing look and spared one for Rand up ahead, too.
"It is hardly safe to open your mouth with two Taviran about. Anything at all might come out."
Nothing that might not have come off his tongue anyway, as he well knew. Though it might have happened one time in 1,000, or 1,000 times 1,000, without Taviran there. Loyal knew that also, and the fact of it seemed to frighten him as much as anything Perrin had ever seen. Some considerable time passed before the Ogier's ears stopped shaking. Fael filled Perrin's mind, but he was not blind, not completely. What he at first saw without seeing, as they rode south and west, began to seep in at the edges. The weather had been hot when he headed north from Kyrian less than 2 weeks ago, yet it seemed the Dark One's touch had gained a harder hold, grinding the land more desperately than before. Brittle grass crackled beneath the horses' hooves, shriveled brown creepers spiderwebbed rocks on the hillsides, and naked branches, not merely leafless but dead, cracked when the arid wind gusted. Evergreen pine and leatherleaf stood brown and yellow, often as not. Farms had begun appearing after a few miles, plain structures of dark stone laid out in squares, the first in isolated clearings in the forest, then coming more thickly as the woodland thinned to trees hardly deserving the name. A cart road straggled there, running over the shoulders and crests of hills, accommodating stone-walled fields more than the terrain. Most of those early farms looked deserted. Here a ladder-backed chair lying on its side in front of a farmhouse, there a rag doll by the roadside. Slat-ribbed cattle and lethargic sheep dotted pastures where frequently ravens squabbled over carcasses. Hardly a pasture but had a carcass or two. Streams ran in trickles down channels of dried mud. Cropland that should have been blanketed with snow looked ready to crumble to dust, where it was not dust already, blowing away. A tall plume of dust marked the passage of the column until the narrow dirt way joined the broad stone-paved road that led from Jengai Pass. Here there were people, though few, and those often lethargic, dull-eyed. With the sinking sun almost halfway down to the horizon now, the air was an oven. The occasional ox-cart or horse-drawn wagon hurried off the road, down narrow tracks or even into fields out of the way. The drivers and the handful of farm folk in the open stood blank-faced as they watched the three banners pass. Close to 1,000 armed men was reason enough to stare. 1,000 armed men heading somewhere in a hurry with a purpose. Reason enough to stare and be thankful when they passed out of sight. At last, when the sun had less than twice its own height yet to fall, the road topped a rise, and there 2 or 3 miles before them lay Kyrian. Rand drew rein, and the maidens, all together now, dropped to their heels where they were. They kept those sharp eyes out, though. Nothing could be seen moving on the nearly treeless hills around the city. A great mass of gray stone sinking toward the river Alguenya on the west, square-walled, square-towered, and stark. Ships of all sizes lay anchored in the river, and some tied to the docks of the far bank, where the granaries were. A few vessels moved under sail or long sweeps. They gave an impression of peace and prosperity. With not a cloud in the sky, the light was sharp, and the huge banners flying from the city's towers stood plain enough to Perrin when the wind unfurled them. The Scarlet Banner of Light and the White Dragon Banner, with its serpentine creature, scaled scarlet and gold. The wavy-rayed rising sun of Kyrian, gold on blue. And a fourth, given equal prominence with the rest. A silver diamond on a field checked yellow and red. Lowering a small looking-glass from his eye, a scowling Dobrain stuffed it into a worked leather tube tied to a saddle. I hoped the savages had it wrong somehow. But if House Sygon flies with the rising sun, Kolaver has the throne. She will be distributing gifts in the city every day. Coin, food, finery. It is traditional for the coronation festival. A ruler is never more popular than for the week after taking the throne. He eyed Rand sideways. The strain of speaking straight out hollowed his face. The commoners could riot if they dislike what you do. The streets could run with blood. Javian's gray gelding danced his rider's impatience, and the man himself kept looking from Rand to the city and back. It was not his city. He had made it clear earlier that he cared little what ran in the streets, so long as his own ruler was safe. For long moments Rand studied the city, or seemed to anyway. Whatever he saw, his face was bleak. Men studied him, worriedly, maybe pityingly. "I will try to see they don't," he said at last. "Flynn, remain here with the soldiers. Men?" She broke in on him sharply.
"No. I am going where you go, Randall Thor. You need me, and you know it."
The last sounded more plea than demand, but when a woman planted her fists on her hips that way and fixed her eyes to you, she was not begging.
"I am going, too," Loyal added, leaning on his long hafted axe. "You always manage to do things when I'm somewhere else."
His voice took on a plaintive edge.
"It won't do, Rand. It will not do for the book. How can I write about things if I am not there?"
Still looking at Min, Rand half raised a hand toward her, then let it fall. She met his gaze levelly.
"This is madness."
Holding his reins stiffly, Dashiva booted the plump mare closer to Rand's black. Reluctance twisted his features. Perhaps even Ashaman worried at being too near Rand.
"All it needs is one man with a bow or a knife, and you don't see him in time. Send one of the Ashaman to do what needs doing, or more, if you think it's necessary. A gateway to the palace. And it can be done before anyone knows what has happened."
"And sit here past dark," Rand cut in, reining his gelding around to face Dashiva. "Until they know this place well enough to open one? That way brings bloodshed for sure. They've seen us from the walls, unless they're blind. Sooner or later they will send somebody to find out who we are and how many." The rest of the column remained hidden behind the rise, and the banners were down there too. But men sitting their horses on a ridge with maidens for company would indeed attract curiosity.
"I will do this my way."
His voice rose in anger, and he smelled of cold fury.
"Nobody dies unless it can't be avoided, Dashiva. I've had a bellyful of death. Do you understand me? Nobody."
"As my Lord Dragon commands."
The fellow inclined his head, but he sounded sour, and he smelled. Perrin rubbed his nose. The smell, skittered, dodging wildly through fear and hate and anger and a dozen more emotions, almost too quickly to make out. He no longer doubted the man was mad, however good a face the fellow put on. Perrin no longer really cared, either.
"This close."
Digging his heels into Stepper's flanks, he started for the city and Fail, not waiting for the rest, barely noticing Aram close behind. He did not have to see Aram to know he would be there. All he could think of was Fail. If he got Swallow safely into the city, he made himself keep Stepper at no more than a quick walk. A galloping rider drew eyes and questions and delays. At that pace, the others caught up with Aram and him fast enough, those who were coming. Min had gotten her way, it seemed, and so had Loyal. The maidens fanned out ahead, giving Perrin sympathetic looks as they trotted by. Chiad studied the ground until she was beyond him.
"I still don't like this plan," Javian muttered on one side of Rand. "Forgive me, my Lord Dragon, but I do not."
Dobrain, on Rand's other side, grunted.
"We have been over that, Mayenner. If we did as you want, they would close the gates on us before we covered a mile."
Javian growled something under his breath and danced his horse a few paces. He had wanted every man to follow Rand into the city. Perrin glanced over his shoulder, past the Ashaman. Damer Flynn, recognizable by his coat, and a few of the Two Rivers men were visible on the ridge, standing and holding their horses. Perrin sighed. He would not have minded having the Two Rivers men along, but Rand was probably right, and Dobrain had backed him up. A few men could enter where a small army could not. If the gates were shut, the Aiel would have to besiege the city, if they still would, and then the killing began anew. Rand had stuffed the dragon scepter into one of the gelding's saddlebags, so just the carved butt stuck out, and that plain coat looked like nothing the dragon reborn would wear. For the Ashaman, nobody in the city had any idea what a black coat meant. A few men were easier to kill than a small army, too, even if most of them could channel. Perrin had seen an Ashaman take a Shido spear through his belly, and the man had died no harder than any other. Dashiva grumbled under his breath. Perrin caught hero and fool in equally disparaging tones. Without Fail, he might have agreed. Once Rand peered toward the Aiel encampment sprawled over the hills 2 or 3 miles east of the city, and Perrin held his breath. But whatever thoughts Rand had, he kept on the road. Nothing mattered more than Fail. Nothing, whether or not Rand saw it so. A good half mile short of the gates, they rode into another camp, one that made Perrin frown. It was big enough for a city itself, a thick band of ramshackle brush huts and rickety tents made from scraps, on burned-over ground, clinging to the high gray walls as far as he could see. This had been called Foregate once, warren of twisting streets and alleys, before the Shido burned it. Some of the people stared in silence as the strange party passed, at an Ogier and Aiel maidens, but most scuttled about their business with wary, sullen faces and a care to notice nothing that was not right in front of them. The bright colors and often tattered cast-off finery worn by Foregaters, mingled with the somber garb more usual for Kyrianen, the plain, dark clothes of villagers and farmers. The Foregaters had been in the city when Perrin left, along with thousands of refugees from deeper inside the country. Most of those faces bore bruises, and worse, cuts and slashes, often unbandaged. Kolaver must have put them out. They would not have left the shelter of the walls on their own. Foregaters and refugees alike feared the return of the Shido, the way a man who had been seared to the bone feared hot iron. The road ran straight through the camp to the Jangai gates, 3 tall square arches flanked by towers. Helmeted men lounged up on the battlements, peering down through the gaps in the stone teeth. Some stared off toward the men on the hilltop, and here and there an officer with a khan held a looking-glass to his eye. Rand's small party drew inquiring glances. Men a horseback and Aiel maidens, not common companions. Crossbows showed atop the serrated wall, but no one raised a weapon. The iron-bound gates stood open. Perrin held his breath. He wanted very much to gallop for the Sun Palace and Fail. Just inside the gates sat a squat stone guardhouse, where strangers to the city were supposed to register before entering. A square-faced Kyrianen officer watched them pass with a disgruntled frown, eyeing the maidens uneasily. He just stood there watching.
"As I told you," Dobrain said once they were by the guardhouse, "Kolaver gave free access to the city for coronation festival. Not even someone under order of arrest can be denied or detained. It is tradition." He sounded relieved, though. Min sighed audibly, and Loyal let out a breath that could have been heard 2 streets over.
Perrin's chest was still too tight for sighing. Swallow was inside Kyrian. Now, if he could only get her to the royal palace. Up close, Kyrian carried out what it had promised from afar. The highest of the hills lay inside the walls, but terraced and faced with stone, till they no longer seemed hills at all. Broad, crowded streets met at right angles. In this city, even the alleys made a grid. The streets rose and fell reluctantly with the hills, often simply cutting through. From shops to palaces, the buildings were all stark squares and severe rectangles. Even the great buttressed towers, each wrapped in scaffolding on a hilltop, the once-fabled topless towers of Carrion, still being rebuilt after burning in the Aiel War. The city seemed harder than stone, a bruising place, and shadows stretching across everything heightened the effect. Loyal's tufted ears twitched almost without stopping. A worried frown creased his forehead, and his dangling eyebrows brushed his cheek. There were a few signs of Coronation Festival, or High Chazaline. Perrin had no notion what the festival might entail, but in the Two Rivers, the Day of Reflection was a time of merriment and forgetting the bleakness of winter. Here, a near hush hung in the air, despite the number of people. Anywhere else, Perrin might have thought it the unnatural heat dragging people's spirits down, but except for four gaiters, Carrionan were a sober, austere lot. On the surface, at least. What lay underneath, he would as soon not think about. The hawkers and cart peddlers, he remembered, were gone from the streets, the musicians and tumblers and puppet shows. Those people would be in the ragtag camp outside the walls. A few closed, dark-painted sedan chairs threaded through the quiet throngs, some with house banners a little larger than Khan standing stiffly above. They moved as slowly as the ox carts, with goad-wielding drivers walking alongside, axles squealing in the stillness. Outlanders stood out, no matter how little color they wore, because few except Outlanders rode. The almost inevitably shorter natives looked like pale-faced crows in their dark garb. Aiel stood out too, of course. Whether one alone or ten together, they walked in clearings through the crowds. Eyes darted away and space just opened up around them wherever they went. Aiel faces turned toward the party as it made its slow way through the crowds. Even if not all recognized Rand in his green coat, they knew who a tall wetlander escorted by maidens must be. Those faces sent a chill down Perrin's spine. Considering. They made him thankful Rand had left all the Aes Sedai behind. Aiel, from the Aiel, the dragon reborn moved through a river of unconcern that parted for the maidens and closed in again behind the Ashaman. The royal palace of Carrion, the sun palace, the palace of the rising sun in splendor. Carrionan were great ones for names, each more extravagant than the last. Stood atop the highest hill in the city, a dark mass of square stone with stepped towers looming over everything. The street, the way of the crown, became a long, broad ramp rising toward the palace, and Perrin drew a deep breath as they started up. Fael was up there. She had to be, and safe. Whatever else, she had to be safe. He touched the knot holding Swallow's reins to a ring on his pommel, stroked the axe at his waist. The horse's shod hooves rang loudly on the paving stones. The maidens made no sound at all. The guards on the great open bronze gates watched their slow approach and exchanged glances. They were colorful for Carrionan soldiers, 10 men with the rising sun in gold on their dark breastplates and scarves in House Saigon's colors tied below the heads of their halberds. Perrin could have written out their thoughts. 13 men on horseback, but in no hurry, and only 2 wearing armor, 1 in Mayenna red. Any trouble would come from Caroline Damodred or Toram Riotan. And Mayenners had no place in that. And there was a woman and an ogier. Surely they intended no trouble. Still, 3 dozen or so maidens trotting ahead of the horses hardly looked as though they were coming for tea. For an instant, all hung balanced. Then a maiden veiled herself. The guards jerked as if goosed, and one slanted his halberd and darted for the gates. 2 steps he took, and stopped, rigid as a statue. Every guard stood stiff, nothing moved but their heads. "Good," Rand murmured. "Now tie off the flows and leave them for later." Perrin shrugged uncomfortably. The Ashaman had spread out behind, taking up most of the width of the ramp. They must be using the one power. Very likely, the 8 of them could tear the whole palace apart. Maybe Rand could have by himself. But if those towers began spewing crossbow bolts, they would die with everyone else, caught in the open on this ramp that no longer seemed so wide. Nobody sped up. Any eyes at the tall, narrow windows of the palace, on the colonnaded walks high above, must see nothing out of the ordinary. Sulin flashed maiden hand talk, and the one who had veiled lowered the black cloth hurriedly, face flushing. A slow walk up the stone ramp. Some of the guards' helmeted heads shook wildly, eyes rolling. One seemed to have fainted, slumping upright with his chin on his chest. Their mouths strained, open, but no sound came out. Perrin tried not to think about what had gagged them. A slow walk through the open bronze gates into the main courtyard. There were no soldiers here. The stone balconies around the courtyard stood empty. Liveried servants rushed out with downcast eyes to take the horses' reins and hold stirrups. Stripes of red and yellow and silver ran down the sleeves of otherwise dark coats and dresses, and each had the rising sun small in the left breast. That was more color than Perrin had seen on a Carianan servant before. They could not see the guards outside, and likely would have done little different if they had. In Carian, servants played their own version of Deus de Mar, the game of houses, but they pretended to ignore the doings of those above them. Taking too much notice of what happened among your betters, or at least being seen to take notice, might mean being caught up in it. In Carian, maybe in most lands, ordinary folk could be crushed unnoticed where the mighty walked. A blocky woman led Stepper and Swallow away without really looking at him. Swallow was inside the Sun Palace, and it made no difference. He still did not know whether Fael was alive or dead. A fool boy's fool fancy. Shifting his axe at his hip, he followed Rand up the broad gray stairs at the far end of the courtyard and nodded when Aram reached over his shoulder again to ease his sword. Liveried men swung open the great doors at the head of the stairs, bronze like the outer gates, and marked large with the rising sun of Carian. Once, the entry hall would have stunned Perrin with its grandeur. Thick square columns of dark marble held a square vaulted ceiling 10 paces above floor tiles that alternated dark blue and deep gold. Gilded rising suns marched around the cornices, and friezes carved in the walls showed Carianan triumphs in battle. The hall was empty, save for a handful of young men clustered beneath one of the friezes, who fell silent when Perrin and the rest entered. Not all men, he realized. All wore swords, but 4 of the 7 were women, in coats and snug breeches, much like men's, their hair cut short as the men's. Not that that was particularly short. Men and women alike had it gathered in a kind of tail that reached their shoulders, tied with a dark ribbon. One of the women wore green, a little paler than normal for Carianan, and another bright blue. All the rest were in dark colors, with a few bright stripes across their chests. They studied Rand's party, with an especial view for himself, Perrin realized. His yellow eyes took people aback, although he hardly noticed it anymore unless somebody jumped or made a commotion. Studied in silence until the last of the Ashaman was in, and the doors swung shut. The boom of the closing covered a moment of fierce whispering. Then they came swaggering closer, the women strutting even more arrogantly than the men, which took some doing. Even the way they knelt was arrogant. The green-clad woman glanced at the one in blue, who had her head down, and said, "My lord dragon, I am Camille Nolaisen. Salanda Darangil leads our society." She blinked at a fierce look from the woman in blue. Despite the glare, Salanda smelled afraid to her bones, if Perrin was making out who was who properly. Clearing her throat, Camille went on.
"We did not think... we did not expect you to return so soon."
"Yes," Rand said softly. "I doubt anyone thought I would return so soon. None of you has any reason to be afraid of me. None at all. If you believe anything, believe that." Surprisingly, he looked right at Salanda when he said that. Her head whipped up, and as she stared at him, the fear smell faded. Not completely, but down to a tatter. How had Rand known it was there?
"Where is Kolaver?" Rand asked.
Camille opened her mouth, but it was Salanda who answered.
"In the Grand Hall of the Sun."
Her voice grew stronger as she spoke, the scent of her fear growing weaker. Oddly, a slight tinge of jealousy touched it once, just for an instant, when she glanced at Min. Sometimes his sense of smell was more confusing than enlightening.
"It is the third sunset convocation," she went on. "We are not important enough to attend. Besides, I think we of the societies make her uneasy."
"The third," Dobraine muttered. "The ninth sunset after her coronation already. She wasted no time. At least they will all be together. No one of any rank or pretension will miss it, Carienin or Tyran."
Drawing herself up on her knees, Salanda managed to make it seem she was meeting Rand eye to eye.
"We are ready to dance the blades for you, my lord dragon."
Sulin shook her head, wincing, and another maiden groaned audibly. Several looked and smelled ready to do some violence then and there. The Aiel could not decide what to make of these young wetlanders. The problem in Aiel eyes were that they were trying to be Aiel, in a way, to follow Jiato, their version of it anyway. These seven were not the lot. Hundreds of the idiots at least could be found all over the city, organized into societies in imitation of the Aiel. Half the Aiel Perrin had heard mention them wanted to help. The other half wanted to strangle them. For himself, he did not care whether they mangled Jiato to mincemeat.
"Where is my wife?" he demanded. "Where is Fael?"
The young fools exchanged guarded looks.
"Guarded?"
"She is in the Grand Hall of the Sun," Salanda said slowly. She is one of Queen of Kolaver's lady attendants." "Put your eyes back in your head, Perrin," Min whispered. "She must have a good reason. You know she must."
Shrugging inside his coat, Perrin tried to gather himself.
"One of Kolaver's attendants?"
Whatever her reason, it must be good. That much he was sure of. But what could it be? Salanda and the others were passing those guarded looks about again. One of the men, a young fellow with a pointed nose, whispered fierce and low,
"We swore not to tell anyone, not anyone, on water oath."
Before Perrin could demand to be told, Rand spoke.
"Salanda, lead the way to the Grand Hall. There will be no blades. I am here to see justice done to all who deserve it."
Something in his voice made Perrin's hackles rise. A hardness grim as a hammer's face.
Fael did have a good reason. She had to.